Foodie Films is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things Cage Club related, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me. Hey there, foodie fans, and welcome back to another episode of Foodie Films. Of course, this is your host, your chef de cinema cuisine, Kyle Reinfried. What's going on? What's happening? How are you? What have you been up to? If you guys follow me on Instagram and Twitter, you will have seen that I was in New Orleans. I think I said that on the last episode that I was going to be heading down there. And it was a blast. I always have such a great time down there. It's really starting to feel like a home away from home. And, I mean, besides, it's an amazing food city, amazing music city. It might be my favorite city. And it's just becoming really, like, more, every visit, more and more special. It was really cool. I was down there by myself, so I was just really talking with a lot of locals. And, you know, talking with a lot of people, but I recorded with five individuals, people that work in food and drink and music, so that was fun. I had this musician, Big Sam of Big Sam Funky Nation, on, and he's really into food, and we talked a whole lot of good stuff about that. But you guys will be hearing those episodes every Wednesday. Yes, not every other week, but every Wednesday in February and the first Wednesday of March, because that is Ash Wednesday, the day after Fat Tuesday. And that's what I really wanted to do with these New Orleans episodes, is honor Mardi Gras, that amazing time of year down in New Orleans, and the amazing tradition. It's just it really is. It's just the best city. It's just, or at least the most unique city. I've never been to another city like it. And the people down there are just so nice, so welcoming, so approachable. And so I'm really, really excited for you guys to hear those episodes. But those episodes aren't going to begin until the first Wednesday. What day is that? The first Wednesday of February. That is February 5th. So the 5th, the 12th, the 19th, 26th, and then March 4th. Those five episodes. But right now, it's been a while since I've talked a movie with you guys. And remember, the humble beginnings of Foodie Films, it's about food-centric movies. And the last movie I talked with you guys was Chocolat, and that was absolutely delightful. But after that, it was a couple of, first cut episodes, and then we did two episodes in a row, me and Brian Rodriguez, my co-host of P.S. I Still Love Hoffman and host of High School Slumber Party, all part of the Cage Club podcast family. And we did those two episodes. I hope you guys really enjoyed those. But that was TV. So here I am back talking a movie. And what a movie. I mean, does it get any bigger in the scope of cinema than the importance of, like, Casablanca? You know, you got, I think I say in the episode, but you got, what, Gone with the Wind, Citizen Kane, The Wizard of Oz, and, like, and Casablanca. And then, you know, of course, later generations, you've got The Godfather and Jaws and all those movies. But really, I mean, Casablanca, what do you guys call it? I call it Casablanca. But it's, you know, you might be thinking, foodie film. The main location is Rick's Cafe Americaine, and so it's all about how that place is a watering hole and a place for refugees and people to maybe forget their worries. And that's you know, I love consuming food and drink, but that's the craziness of it, is like how it brings us all together. And so I think this movie really highlights that in the case of the character of Rick, played by Humphrey Bogart. And so, really excited to talk about it with you guys, or for you guys to listen. And I talked about it with Anthony Scalia, not Scalia, not the deceased Supreme Court Justice, but this is someone I met. We went to the same college, not the same time. You guys are going to hear all about it. Someone I really enjoy talking films with. He knows a lot about older movies. He was excited to talk about this. I was excited to talk about this. It is award season. It's a Best Picture winner. This movie came out, what did I figure out, 78 years ago, 1942, right? That's 78 years ago. So I wonder what's going to be Best Picture this year. Past couple years have been some pretty good movies, and this is Best Picture winner from 1942, Casablanca. Here we go, me and Anthony talking it.
What do you think? Is it too soury? Is it the sour too
I think
sour?
it's pretty good, actually. I mean, I like sour things.
I like sour things too.
It sort of has like, maybe it's just because I have, usually it's like sour green apple. I feel like it's green apple. Like everything sour is green apple.
Yeah, this is from Hermit Thrush, which I did a recent episode of, and I spoke with the VP Avery Schwenk up there, and it's a brewery up in Vermont in Brattleboro. Vermont is just like the one of those craft beer meccas.
Are they really?
Yeah, Vermont and like out in like Michigan, Oregon, Asheville, North Carolina, it's all these places. New Jersey's stepping up their game though. Have you been to any breweries in
Around here? I mean, I went to the Sam Adams one in Boston. I
Well,
went
that's a
to.
classic one. Yeah.
That's cool because it's free.
Yeah.
So it tastes better when it's free. And then I went to like one in Ireland, by in Kilkenny.
Oh, you
I
didn't
went
go to
to.
Guinness where you didn't go
No, no. So, like,
to
I flew into Dublin, but I didn't stay in Dublin.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, but
yeah
no. So your answer, no, none of them, none around here in Jersey.
you gotta I mean you
Oh,
get
Cape May Brewing, I went to.
okay there's a bunch by you by us. We're both North Jersey boys. You got Ghost Hawk, the first one in Passaic County in Clifton. You got Elementary
I want to go to Ghost Hawk,
in
by the way.
Hackensack.
I've heard of that.
What's that?
Ghost Hawk, is
Oh
it good?
yeah, no, that's a big one. I'm gonna look up all the other. I'm so bad with names sometimes.
Then there's like, as you go down the coast, there's like, Ship Bottom has one. There's a few like around AC, and then Cape May. Like I know that they're like shore ones.
Yeah, in Jersey City we got Departed Souls, you got NJ Beer Co. in North Bergen. What other ones we got? We got Brick City, that's the one I was thinking of. That's not too far. That's right in like, is that technically Little Ferry? Yeah, there's a couple right by you. But yeah, good
Yeah, I'm
spots
gonna check
that.
them out. I
You
want to
gotta
go to that the Ghost Talk, whatever.
Yeah, Ghost Talk, yeah.
That's the one I really
Yeah,
been on
it's
my
right
list.
across the street from Rutt's Hut.
And I've never been there. We were
Whoa.
gonna go, me and my girlfriend, this weekend for the first time, but like we ate bagels and then it was like, I'm not gonna eat a freaking, like,
Rutt's Hut
it's
is
gonna
like
kill
a
me.
is a North Jersey staple,
I
even just
know.
New Jersey staple. It's that, and then oh God, my memory is just so bad sometimes.
Are
I
you
think I
talking
should
just
get a
hot
CAT
dogs right
scan.
now?
What's that? Yeah, well, hot dogs, yeah, because then there's the one in that Bourdain went to in Fort
And
Lee,
yeah,
Hiram's. There we
that's
go.
like, that's so famous.
Yeah, that's a good one. They got the whole Bourdain food trail from the episode of Parts Unknown that he did.
There used to be a place in Jersey, in Lodi, called Panama's, that
Yeah.
was pretty famous for them, but yeah.
But I mean, it's funny that you haven't been there yet, because you surprise me. Well, I mean, this was a lovely, I'm gonna make it not a lovely smooth thing right now. I'm gonna say I'm here with Anthony. Anthony, I don't want to say it wrong, because Italian heritage and Italian pride, and I don't want to say it the same as the, well, technically, wasn't he Antonin?
Antonin.
Antonin, yeah,
So
this is a
the
former Supreme Court justice.
right. So the correct way to say it is the way he pronounced it, which is Scalia. But to distance myself from him, I say Scalia.
There you
So I
go.
say it the wrong way on purpose.
But before the knowledge of him, right? Or
Yeah. Well.
the,
Yeah.
okay,
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
exactly.
He's all right.
Yeah, but we've known one another for, we went to the same college, but we're separated by more years than obviously sharing college together. But we met one another because of, we both worked in the media center around Pope College, and because of Zach Bressler, kind of like a lack of a better word. I mean, definitely a friend, but a mentor to us both as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, he's the man.
He is the man. Just did a gig with him last week in Pittsburgh, and it was a good catching up. But yeah, we met and we've worked together on other shoots together, and I love talking film with you. I know you are a big film buff, but just like you said that you haven't like been to like Rutt's Hut yet, you always surprise me with like there's certain films you haven't seen
yet. Like things that I should have seen 20 times by now.
Yeah. You hadn't seen like which Star Wars movies have you seen?
The fourth and the fifth, so New Hope and Empire.
Okay.
And, I haven't seen
and you watched
else.
Those not like didn't you watch that specifically because
you gave them to me to
yeah bar. Because you needed to watch them because you're like doing a video for someone right you're for LPG oh
That's
he was
right.
on this license plate guy famous the New York Giants number one fan he was on here we talked the movie Beer League he was doing doing a video for his wife, and she's a big Star Wars nut, and so you were doing it for him, and you're like, I have no idea, like, anything, like, what to help out with. I'm like, well, here you go. The two most important, I mean, the original trilogies, that but yeah. you're like, you watched 4 and 5, and that's it.
And I think they're okay.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, look, I think Star Wars is something that you had to grow up on it, you know what I mean? Yeah, it's yeah. like... There were certain films that by the time I went to college, like for the first time I saw them was in college, like Ghostbusters. I didn't see until I was in college.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't a film I grew up on or anything like that. To this day, I still have a lot on my list that I haven't seen. Like one of the ones that I constantly want to see is The Master. Like, and I feel like that's a film that I would love. It's just like I haven't seen it yet.
Mm-hmm.
There's no excuse.
Yeah, and it's actually on Netflix right now. So
oh, it is. Oh, that's right. It's on my list.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, this is how I never see it. I forget.
Yeah, I think it just like came on like this month. It's like, oh, you got to watch this one. You know, it's like I think this time of year because the Academy Awards and everything like that.
Yeah.
Like, put some more good movies on and everything like that. Joaquin Phoenix is nominated for the Joker.
I mean, I'm more of like I'm a classic movie fan.
You like, are. You're like a monster movie fan, like the Universal, right?
Yep. Those are the first films I ever saw. First movie I ever saw was Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
Really?
Yeah, and it was sort of like perfect because it blended
of like your dad
horror
or your grandfather
and comedy.
Or?
My dad had a video store.
Okay. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. He owned a video store like while my mom and he were engaged and early into their marriage. So he was a big Marx Brother fan, a big like James Cagney fan, and he kind of went out of business because back then you had to like buy the VHS for like $80 or whatever it was.
That's crazy.
And he would buy the movies that he liked, not the movies that were popular. So he went out of business.
Yeah, it was very niche for like his liking.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was sort of like a high fidelity with a video store, I guess. But so I grew up on those films. For some reason, like Universal Monsters were like embedded in me. Then I moved on to like early Warner Brothers gangster films, like, you know, every 7-year-old does.
Yeah.
James Cagney. Humphrey Bogart.
Yeah.
Was one of the first times I saw him was in a film with Cagney called The Roaring Twenties.
Mm-hmm.
That I still try to watch once in a while. It's a great, great film.
That's like I've seen the classics from back then, but that's a generation that I definitely need to pick up more on. Like, I've seen the best of like those, or, you know, the greatest hits, I should say.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm sure there's plenty of, like, hidden gems that are, you know, would be the best of. But as far as, like, the greatest hits, you know, it's like almost like the Eagles. I don't love the Eagles, but, you know, I enjoy their greatest hits.
Yeah, you know the important songs.
Yeah. So I know, like, the important films, like, up until the mid-60s, once, like, the anti-hero came in, and then that's when my film knowledge really kicks into gear, and you get... What was, like, Spielberg and Lucas and De Palma and Coppola all and Scorsese all called? Weren't they, like, the... New Hollywood, but didn't even they have, like, a...
Film
like,
Brats.
Yeah,
they
film...
They called
yeah,
them
the
a couple.
Film,
there,
the Brat Pack. No, the Brat Pack is the 80s group of people, but I thought there was, like, some kind of... But, yeah.
They were, like, they were the first group of people who went to school to study film.
Yeah.
Like, that was the difference.
And came into the studio system when the studios were no longer being run by, like... The guys that have the names of Warner and Meyer and all those guys.
Yeah.
And it was like corporations were buying the studios and being like, okay, what's trending right now?
Exactly.
And then by hiring these young guys that people wanted to see movies made by, it just changed like the landscape of cinema.
I mean, I will say that my favorite era of films is 1968 to 1978.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as I love the 30s and 40s, that's my like second favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I still love the 60s and 70s. I mean,
is your favorite movie of all time Easy Rider?
No, it's in my top 10.
Okay.
My favorite movie of all time is The Great Escape.
Ah.
Steve McQueen. Have you ever seen it?
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. That's. I mean.
Love it.
That's then you must have loved the scene from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood with DiCaprio.
I freaked out. My brother saw it the night before and he was like, there's a scene you're really going to like.
That's so good.
I totally forgot he said that. By the time it came on the screen, I was like, it tilts. Yeah. Like, he's playing that character. I can give you my top three or top four favorite movies if you're
please,
interested.
Yeah.
It's Great Escape is number one. And number two is One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Number three is Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. And number four is It's a Wonderful Life.
Whoa. There you go. I mean, it's a great movie. Some people, I don't know, I think people love it or hate it.
Do you hate it?
Maybe not all people love and hate it. I'm kind of...
That's a good answer.
I haven't watched it in a really long time. I think, or should I say, I shouldn't say love and hate it. People like love it or just like, I'm talking film people. They love it or they just like appreciate it.
Yeah.
I probably fall more into just like appreciate it. You know, because there's sure. as people that like, I always compared it to like once you really like studied film and by no means did we go to NYU or UCLA or, you know, anything like that. But just like when you care that much about something and you're watching that many movies, so maybe if you don't have a degree in it, you just start appreciating things more. And also like movies become more like, I always compare it to, spoiler alert, you know, Christmas morning. And when you're, you know, a kid, awesome, magical. But then once you lose the magic or find out that Santa isn't real, but, you know, he might be. I don't know. I'm not trying to, yeah.
You never know.
Yeah, you never know. But since popular belief that Santa isn't real, the magic is lost. But then, like, once you become older and whether you have kids or your own or you become, like, an aunt and uncle and just see it, like, then through the eyes or trying to make mm-hmm. it special for a kid. So that's, like, what I think, like, once you have your people that just go to the movies to enjoy it and that's being the kid. And then you have, once you learn it, that's, like, being the parent and stuff.
Yeah.
Like that, you know?
Yeah. And I try not to be, like, for lack of a better word, a snob.
Yeah.
Like, when I watch movies. Because you could easily be that guy who sees a lot of movies and, like, I don't know. It doesn't meet the specific criteria for me to like call mm-hmm. it a good film. I really try to go into every movie just completely blank. I don't even like to watch a trailer. Just try to go into it like, and like I went to Joker, all the films this year, Parasite.
Yeah.
Everything I've seen was just like, just right out of the gate. And I always find that's a better experience. I want to know almost nothing about a film going in. I don't figure the same way.
Certain things, I'll be that way, but then, like, I mean, sometimes it's not like I'm trying to spoil anything for myself, but I definitely like take in and like read articles. Again, not like anything that definitely includes spoilers, but I'll read certain things and I'll watch a trailer or whatever. My kind of belief, I mean, I definitely agree, but since I'm just somebody that like I'm just ready and always ready to consume, and if it's right there in front of me, I don't have the willpower to like not click on it or whatever and read it or take it in visually. That I'm like, if it's that good, it shouldn't ruin it for me. But mm-hmm. also, then again, like, sometimes trailers do give, like, too much away.
Yeah.
Or just, or make you start thinking it's going to go a certain way, and then when it doesn't go that way, you get really upset because your imagination has taken over. Case in point, just even, not even the trailers, but with the latest Star Wars, I mean, for me, obviously, there's people then even older that had since 1983, but when I watched it for the first time in, like, 1994, I thought Luke Skywalker was going to have a certain trajectory. And then when they gave me a different one, I'm still not, like, again, I appreciate it. I think it's a good story. I think thematically it's fantastic. But that's just, like, what they did wasn't, like, my Luke Skywalker in my imagination since I was... six, seven years old.
Right.
But.
Which is why I just tend to stick to the originals, like, especially with, talking about Universal Monsters, they're remaking a lot of them. Like, they remade The Mummy with Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
I guess you can't call it a remake, but they're rebranding it.
Yeah, reboot. Yeah, I mean, there was even, I enjoyed The Mummies with Brendan Fraser in the 90s.
Those are good because they're not trying to be something else.
Yeah, it was like Indiana Jones, but with like the mummy in a way.
It's cool.
Yeah.
But now they have a new Invisible Man with Elizabeth Moss. I just saw the trailer to it the other night, yesterday, when I was in the theater.
For a while, I was going to be Johnny Depp when they remember when they released that picture. Yeah, because it was Benicio del Toro as like Wolfman. And him, Johnny Depp is Invisible Man. Russell Crowe is Dr. Jekyll.
Yeah, and then I think John Hamm was going to be Frankenstein.
Oh, really?
Or Dr. Frankenstein or something.
Something, yeah.
In the film.
Yeah, but. And there was like one other that's just like, but they were just, because that was like right after, not right after, but like because of Marvel and the MCU, everyone was like, we should make a connected universe.
Right,
it's like, that's not going to work for everything. Not everything needs to like, you don't need to like have a cameo of, like, I saw that one, the Tom Cruise mummy one, and, like, Russell Crowe played Dr. Jekyll, and it was, like, Dr. Jekyll was in part of this, like, monster, you know, I don't know. He was the Nick Fury.
Which, by the way, not to be a Universal Monster snob again, but they were actually the first films to create a cinematic universe, because... There was a film, I forgot what year it was, mid to late 40s, called Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman. Mm-hmm. That was the first time two characters from separate films were in a movie together. And so then they created a universe. And by the late 40s, they had films with the Wolfman, Dracula, Frankenstein, the Crazy Doctor, Hunchback. Everybody was in it. It was like a party.
Yeah.
You know?
It was the Monster Mash.
Right, exactly. So. But anyway.
Yeah. But I mean, as far as movies like this year that are... I mean, that just came out, but obviously in the Oscar hunt, you know, we are mid-award season right now. I guess I think SAG happened just last night or something as we're recording. I don't know. I don't care necessarily. I get happy when a movie that I like, I see, like, wins. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's just like, I don't have like a dog in the fight per se, but it's just like I really want Brad Pitt to win for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Just finished that supporting, first of all, that supporting actor like category is insane.
Yeah.
Joe Pesci and Al Pacino.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Hopkins, Brad Pitt, and Tom Hanks. Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
like crazy. You're not gonna make a bad decision. And I just finished Two Popes, so I saw like all of them.
I need to see Two Popes, yeah.
Brad Pitt is exceptional. He always is, but especially in this role.
Yeah, but like, I know we both saw The Lighthouse, and so as far as watching the trailer for that, like, that didn't spoil it for me in any kind of way whatsoever, because that movie just had so many, like, tricks up its sleeve. Like, it was ambiguous enough, the trailer, but, you know, so it's not, because it's not crazy, like, Marvel or Star Wars action property that they're like, well, in the trailer, I'm sure there's such a formula for those trailers.
Yeah.
Like, show just a little bit of this action set piece from the first act and show that these two characters are going to have a little tiff in the movie. Like, something like that. But, I know you're much more of a film person than, I mean, maybe not. Maybe I'm going to learn something really big about you today. But I know that your knowledge of film, but let's just talk food for a little bit.
Sure.
I mean, we're both North Jersey guys. What were you eating when you were growing up? Who was cooking? Were you guys going out to eat? Mostly eating at home? That kind of stuff.
When I was growing up, I always wanted to go out to eat.
Yeah?
And that's why I go out to eat now.
Did you have a favorite spot, though? Like that
Burger King.
Like,
oh, okay.
I thought it was going to be like some local, like, cool, like, I don't know, like tavern or sort. There was always, when I was growing up, there was this place called, it's called the Iron Horse. It's still open in Westwood, New Jersey. And I always called it the train restaurant because that's what, I mean, Iron Horse, you know,
train.
And it was right by the tracks in Westwood and you could see the trains coming by or whatever. And they had great burgers and they would always, I love coleslaw, and they would bring coleslaw to like the table. Like, I mean, that's very like diner style.
Sure, yeah.
But they just had really good coleslaw, and they also had this jar of like minty chocolate, like colorful things that like you could, that they had these red napkins, and I always remember scooping it out and putting it in the red napkin, like twisting up the napkin and bringing it home.
That's so funny.
That was like my go-to move. And I would always have a Shirley Temple there. I love Shirley Temples as a kid.
Oh, yeah, me too.
But you're always like, Mom, Dad, I want to go to Burger King.
Well, yeah, because, like, mostly we cooked at home. Uh-huh. Like, my mom did a lot of the cooking, and my grandmother cooked a lot, too. She was from Italy, so she made just pretty basic, like, pasta dishes. She made, but everything she made, no matter how simple it was, just tasted great. I don't know what it was. Like, she cut up a potato, she put it in a pan. It was the greatest thing you ever had in your life.
Like, did you have, like, a favorite dish of hers, though?
Yeah, with breakfast time, she made, like, these home fries that were sensational.
Oh, wow,
I am
okay.
A potato junkie.
Yeah, so am I. I'm pretty, I'm like a, like a basic bitch in that way of just of like food that I'm like meat and potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's the Irish, the German, like in me, I think. But at the same time, I mean, I love so much food. But like, if you just put some, you know, like a steak and a baked potato in front of me, I'll be a very happy individual.
Exactly. I mean, I'm probably my biggest weakness is sandwiches. I love a sandwich. Here.
Like, I'm such a
Put anything between two pieces of bread and it's going to be a good outcome. That's my motto.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, Reuben or like a turkey club, anything. It's just like, and I love just having the sandwich and the fries combo.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm a diner
guy too. Or just even chips. I love chips and like sometimes taking chips and putting it on the sandwich.
On the sandwich.
And getting the crunch and everything like that. Yeah. As the listeners know, like I, you know, worked at a deli like starting at 16. I still work random days there because they're like a second family to me. And I love making sandwiches.
Yeah.
It's just, there's something just so simple, but like at the same time you could go like complex, but like I love just like if it's like really good roast beef and just like, just even sometimes roast beef mayo and like salt and pepper. But if I want like a little crunch in there, I'll find like a good leaf lettuce and some onion or something.
Yeah.
If I want a little extra flavor in there, maybe I'll put like a slice of cheese on it. Or instead of mayo, I'll go Russian. And just like,
Russian's good.
It's just, there's a, for such a simple thing, there's like endless, like, you know, like when you're in like math class and it's like, well, give how many, you know, when you're doing like those word problems, like how how many outcomes could there be? There's like endless outcomes when it comes to sandwiches.
Well, I ate dinner right before I came here and I'm now hungry, which doesn't take much, like really doesn't take much, especially lately. I have to stop eating and start doing the opposite, exercising.
I started doing, I'm not doing it perfectly well yet, but, oh God, what's it called? Intermittent fasting, which there's like multiple versions of it. Nick Solares, who was on this, told me about it. Like I, you know, like heard it, but I never knew anything about it. And he kind of told me about it. There's like multiple versions. The most basic one is eat only in like an 8-hour period during the day, which doesn't sound like crazy, but in the end, like you then have to kind of be, because like that's the key thing. So then you're either, it's like 10 to 6.
12 to 8,
like, you know, what's your, like, 12 to 8 probably makes the most sense for, like, me and just, like, working on, like, when we work on shoots, like, we're probably not done until 6.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you're going to get home, you're going to cook, but then also, obviously, then it comes into that, then you got to be smart and, like, I mean, I'm doing, like, more meal prepping just so, like, food is, like, ready, so I don't have to also think about, like, you know, there's, it's just so easy to get food these days with, like, fucking Uber Eats.
Yeah,
like,
you know, come right to your door.
Yeah.
And there's an art in cooking, I think, that a lot of people sort of miss. I mean, I am not a great chef or anything, but I enjoy when no one's home and I have the kitchen to myself and the fridge is open. I can choose whatever I want and just go to town.
Yeah.
Either on a sandwich or just another pasta dish or something like that. But I'm a big food guy. Diners, sort of staple. I mean, I love diners. But I also really, really love sushi. Right now, that's my number one food.
Oh, yeah?
I would eat sushi over anything else.
When was your sushi, like, discovery?
The first time I, like, remembered enjoying it was, like, sophomore in college.
Okay.
So I was pretty late in the game.
Yeah.
Maybe to sushi.
I think I was in, like, middle school, and there was even some, I was, like, it was, like, my dad's friend's son, who's, like, 2 years younger than me. Like, we were hanging out. Happened to be in Westwood, and we were like by like a strip mall, and he's like, oh, I'm hungry, like I'm gonna stop in, like it was a supermarket that had sushi available, so I'm sure it wasn't even the best sushi,
right?
But I'm just like, oh, like I don't, okay, I'll try it. And it was even, I remember it was eel. I'm like, what a weird sushi for the first one, like, to try. But I loved it. And so, like, even the for, and then even for a while, I was like, no, I don't want to eat raw tuna and, like, salmon, like, I don't know, like, no, eel. But it's, like, it's such a weird thing, like, tuna's pretty freaking common.
Yeah.
But now I love practically every kind of bit of,
Sushi,
so.
That's the thing, like, my grandparents, like, my grandfather was a hunter, so he would be like a deer hunter, and they were almost like Native Americans. They just like would eat and take apart every
little
bit of this animal.
So you were growing, I mean, were you eating venison?
No, my mom was, actually. By the time I was born, it sort of stopped. But there's like many a story about like deer eyes, deer brains, all this stuff like being eaten.
Mm-hmm.
And when we started eating sushi, they looked at us like we were crazy. I'm like, you guys eat garbage. I mean, like, what is it about raw fish? All of a sudden, it turned a lot of it, like, my Italian family off. I was like, oh, raw fish? You can't eat raw fish. You are eating eyeballs. Like, yeah, it's, yeah, you know yeah. what I mean? Like, what yeah, are you yeah, talking yeah. about? Last person who should be talking.
Yeah.
But I guess it's something about the uncooked thing that, like, scares a lot of people.
Yeah. But, I mean, at least we know, like, with fish, I mean, obviously, you still have to be, like, safe. But if it's being prepared properly, then, yeah, not much to worry about.
And you know what? I'll take a parasite once in a while. I just, I'm just sorry. I just love it too much. I can't give it up.
Yeah. Well, you know what, let's get into this film. I gave you like a couple options and, I wasn't sure, you know, there was like a new one, there was an older film, and I know you're into older films, so I'm very happy to talk this one. And it's kind of appropriate because this is the last movie episode, and I haven't done a movie in a while. I've done a bunch of those first cut episodes that I do, right in a row. And before that, it was me and Brian Rodriguez, host of High School Slumber Party and co-host of mine for PS I Love Hoffman. We did two episodes, first one being seasons 1-5 of the Friendsgivings episodes, because we're both Friends fans, and then the second episode was seasons 6-10.
Mm-hmm.
So haven't done a movie in a while, and I'm very excited to talk about this. So without further ado, let's get into Casablanca, this little unknown beautiful film of the 1940s.
It's very small. Nobody yeah. knows of it, but it's great.
I mean, this film, I have not watched it in so long. And I get long enough that probably the last time I watched it, I was still very much like, I mean, I'm still always watching new films and learning things from it, but it was probably at a point that I'm really just like taking, it was probably, you know, point being probably back in college.
Last time going down the list of classics.
Yeah, going down the list of classics and like appreciating, but like now that I'm, you know, like 10, I mean, I graduated college over 10 years ago, that just maybe because of more life experience or just whatever, like this movie just like, just, I mean, there's a reason that it's one of the greatest movies of all time, and people revere it that way. And it's not like, you know, it wasn't like an aha moment for me. I like already knew it, but maybe I was thinking it from like a, just like multiple, like, you know, like what makes up, you know, a film, like all the departments and everything like that. But this, with the story, like this time, I don't know, it was just like one of the most beautiful stories I've seen in such a long time. And again, I didn't forget the story, but just seeing it play out on a screen in front of me by some of the greatest actors of all time.
Really, it's a beautiful, beautiful
really,
film.
Really beautiful, yeah.
Like, the story, I think, is great. I mean, it's simple. Maybe it's cliche by now, but I think there was something about the couple sort of, you know, not getting together in the end. It may have been a little different for that yeah. time, you know, especially. You know, a lot of films ended on the kiss, and there was a kiss, but they weren't together.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
Yeah, I was looking at you, kid.
It was just such a... I mean, there's so many things I love about this film. The first thing I'll say is, like, the cast. Just going down the list of cast, I mean, obviously Bogart's great.
Yeah.
Ingrid Bergman is my favorite actress of all time.
Wow.
It took me a long time, but I finally acquired an autograph of hers from an auction house.
That is cool.
I was obsessed.
Is it just like a normal like portrait pictures or from a movie?
There's a film that she made with Cary Grant in the 50s called Indiscreet. Mm-hmm. It's a publicity photo of that film with like it almost looks like an envelope. So half the envelope is a picture and the other half is just her autograph.
Right.
It's like a very small sort of thing. And the unsung heroes of the film, I think, are the supporting cast: Sydney Greenstreet, Peter Lorre, and Claude Rains.
They're just there's so many colorful characters in this movie.
It's great.
And this is a movie that's like, it's funny.
Yeah.
It is a funny movie. It is a sad movie. It is a dramatic movie. It is just beautiful, you know, like overall. And I mean, do you remember like the first time watching this?
Yeah, this was one of the films I bought the DVD before I had watched it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so like I used to do that so much.
That's a gamble.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah. But at least at that point, like I'm sure, but you had at least heard of it.
Yeah, I had heard of it. So when I bought the DVD, I was in third grade.
Oh wow! Damn. Okay.
I didn't buy it. It was given to me.
Yeah, I was probably in like eighth grade. I think my aunt gave me a bunch of like old timey Oscar winners or something like that.
Yeah.
It was probably, you know, back when like Best Buy was Best Buy and had so many different like collector sure. things and stuff yeah. like that. You know, like I have like a bunch of Hitchcocks because of that. bunch of Mel Brooks, that kind of stuff.
But I didn't, I mean, I probably saw it then, but I couldn't retain anything. I didn't see it again until I was in like high school.
Okay.
And I really liked it. But then by the time I got to college, I was watching it a lot more. I maybe had seen it like 3 times while I was in college. Yeah, it is a funny movie. Like, there's that great line where Claude Rains, I can't remember exactly, but it's sort of like, it's like, you know, there's no gambling here. You're winning, yeah, sir. Thank you. Thank you very much. You know,
like, I wrote that down. There's just so many, like, there's so many classic lines. I think in, like, AFI or whatever, you know, in like, the most quotable quotes or most famous quotes, there's, like, at least 6 from Casablanca.
Yeah, oh, my God. I mean,
let me try. I put, like, little asterisks next to
them. All the gin joints.
Yeah, exactly. One. I don't want to do that one. So, of all the gin joints in all the towns in all the world, she walks into mine.
I love that.
And the fact that, like, play it again, Sam, is never said.
That's another.
Play it, Sam. You know,
play as time goes by.
Yeah. Let's kiss me. Kiss me, you know, as if it were the last time. I mean, here's looking at you, kid. And
we'll always have Paris.
We'll always have Paris. Maybe not today. Maybe not tomorrow. And
the,
you know,
the rest of your life.
Yeah, round up the usual suspects.
Oh, that's such a great line.
Which obviously then gave the to Bryan Singer the idea for the title of Usual Suspects. And then Louis, I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Which is like, I forget that that's the last line of the
film.
What
a perfect last line. That would be like a fun. I think in like coffee table books. Like, I always try to think of like tangible things. Obviously, there could be a BuzzFeed article in a tangible sense. Like, even I'm like, is it podcast worthy? But just like best last line movies.
Yeah.
You know, like
best first lines, best last lines.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, I think so.
It's called bookends or script ends. I don't know.
Script ends. But I mean, the thing about Casablanca too is like, it ages well, because I feel like the hardest thing for a classic movie to let me restart that. I think the most difficult aspect of classic films is like their romance. It's not very relatable anymore. Mm-hmm. The way they portray romance in classic films, you'd look at today and say, what the hell are they? You know, they say, I love you 3 seconds into meeting each other, and they don't kiss until the very end. You're like, what's going on?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. This one, fortunately, I mean, I wasn't watching it for this reason, but I didn't really catch any, like, dated elements to their love story. Like, fortunately, there was no, like, slapping of women and, you know, stuff that obviously is totally not appropriate. I mean, should have never existed, but is not seen in our cinema landscape now. But, you know, and then also, as far as it's just to the level of that, how this movie is still relatable and more so even poignant, just like the story and dealing with isolationism, corruption, immigration, refugees.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's big.
It's big. I mean, it's something that the world is still facing, and like even our country. And it's just kind of, it's weird that it's almost a very patriotic American film, besides obviously being an American film, but like, the movie, you know, you're never in America.
Mm-hmm.
You've got 2 Americans in the movie. And, you know, obviously, you know, Rick's Cafe American, you know, like it's in the title there. But just, it kind of made me sad for like the beacon of hope that America once was. And I think we've definitely lost. I'm not trying to get all political.
No, I understand what you're saying.
But
though,
it's definitely, it's just something in that movie. It's just a beautiful, like, again, even, like, smaller, you've got, like, the young Bulgarian couple, you've got the older German couple.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this movie is incredibly diverse. I was reading some of the trivia on it, and during that, the singing of the national anthem.
I was going to bring this up, yeah.
Those are a bunch of real-life immigrants and refugees from Europe that came here, and they had them as, you know, the extras in the movie. And some of those, like, tears that are happening, those are real.
I think you know, that was, I was going to bring that up. That was one of the pieces of trivia I remembered about this film too, is because that is a powerful moment when they sort of stop. I think they're doing like the German anthem,
some form of the. I was reading, because then there was like a specific Nazi anthem, but I think this was just some kind of German national song, you know, of sorts. Like,
yeah,
if we start singing like the, I don't know. I mean, there's just obviously the Star Spangled Banner, and there's, I mean, we've got a bunch of songs.
Yeah.
But But yeah, then all of a sudden then Rick, who never wants it to be political, kind of gives like the nod to like, you know, for them to start singing the French national anthem.
And it's just, Rick is, oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Rick is just iconic, and this is sort of the person that you always want to be. Not that you want to be some guy depressed in a bar over a lost love, yeah. But if you had to be,
yeah.
He's the guy who you'd want to model it after.
Yeah, if I had to, like, yeah, like, own a bar and, like, be heartbroken and always be, like, boybin.
Right,
fucking well. I even wrote that down, like, the way Rick pronounces boybin.
The director, I think, is, like, worth mentioning because Michael Curtiz is, like, this probably is one of his most well-known films. Mm-hmm. But he has, I think, one of the highest records for, like, a director ever. He's directed, apparently, like, somewhere between 150 and 200 films.
Wow.
In his career. I mean, maybe some of them were sort of when he was in Europe. But he's directed other great, great films, like White Christmas is a Michael Curtiz film. Mm-hmm. A lot of the James Cagney films that I was talking to you about before with Bogart. I know he directed Angels with Dirty Faces. Every time I sort of like look down the list of Curtiz films, I'm always like, I love that film. And I just feel like he doesn't get enough credit as a director because he's done so much.
At least, I mean, he did win Best Director for it.
Yeah, he did.
So, I mean, this movie won, and again, very appropriate because this is the last movie we'll be doing before the Academy Awards. It won Best Picture, it won Best Director, and it won Best Writing. It was nominated for Actor, Supporting Actor, Cinematography, Editing, and Music. And so, what's that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Eight Academy Awards. That's huge.
Yeah, that's
That's definitely
big.
Up there. I mean, more and more there seems to be, like, I remember it was a big deal, like, that Titanic was on the list of, like, you know, it was like that and Ben-Hur that had, like, 11 nominations or something like that. But I think that even this year, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood has 10 or 11 or something like
Joker
that.
Joker has 11. And Once Upon a Time has 10, yeah. So it's like, what does that mean anymore?
Yeah, what is it? Yeah, exactly. It lost a little bit of its... I mean, the fact that obviously up to 10 movies can be nominated now and stuff like that. It's lost a little bit of its pizzazz.
But something about me also just totally loves the setting of Casablanca. It's just like sort of fabulous because so many of these Warner films at the time were just backlot. You know, I mean, this was shot on the backlot too, but it was just like old tenements or whatever they were trying to do, like a gangster film. Or I just felt like this film had a different air to it because the setting was so different.
Mm-hmm.
And like there was something more romantic about that. I mean, there's scenes where they go to Paris.
Yeah, there's a flashback to Paris, yeah.
There's something about Ingrid Bergman's character, I think, that really sells me
mm-hmm.
on this love story.
I mean, they do have really good on-screen chemistry. There's just something, at the same time that her character's been through a lot, she's definitely, like, the innocence in the movie still. You know, that her and the fellow refugees, like the young Bulgarian couple and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's a beautiful love story that slowly gets, you know, like, peeled back and we get, you know, I mean, that's something that I think, you know, like, it's almost, there should be, I'm going to, like, approach this, it's like in a very dictatorship kind of way. You should watch certain movies before you're allowed to watch other movies because, like you said something to it earlier, that at this point, there's been plenty of movies that have done things similar.
Mm-hmm.
So then, like, Casablanca won't be as special to you, at least in that sense. I mean, even a movie like Citizen Kane and Gone with the Wind, Wizard of Oz. I mean, just groundbreaking movies. And Star Wars, too, when it comes to special effects and stuff like that. And then you watch that, or Jaws, and, like, I had, like, a deep conversation, not even conversation, argument with, like, my family one time, probably, like, Thanksgiving or Christmas. And Jaws was brought up, and they're like, "Oh yeah, but now the shark just looks so like cheesy." I'm like, "No, I don't agree even." But I'm like, even if it does, like the other elements still work. Like, yeah, okay. Once it's like on the boat and you see it like shaking back and forth, like, and you have time to really look at it. Okay, yeah, sure. But then when you see, oh God, why am I blinking out? It's Quint right now.
Robert Shaw.
Robert Shaw. And when he's just like,
terrifying.
And then terrifying. Also when you hear that chomp and the blood and everything like that, and the machete into like the nostril, it's just Robert Shaw sells it.
Then. Oh my God.
And like, yeah. And it's just,
that's the scariest film I've ever seen in my life. And I love horror. I'm a horror junkie.
Yeah, I'm not a horror. I mean, especially nowadays with like just like too much gore and everything like that.
I don't really even like newer horror films.
Yeah, I like, like suspense movies more.
Yeah, you know, like,
yeah.
But no, I mean, yeah, back to that. I think that the thing about Casablanca that does make it timeless is, and what I was saying about the setting, I would love to just be, a patron at Rick's.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to just be sitting there around that sort of energy, just hanging out there and seeing the characters that come in and out of the place. And there's just something about there that makes you want to be a part of it. And I think that's the difference, like what I was saying with location in that film, is like Rick's America. Is it Rick's American Cafe? Is that what it's called?
Rick's Cafe American.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I always got confused by that. No, I'm not going to lie.
But I mean, they just do such a good job setting up the location. It's the primary location for the film, and that's why I have it as a foodie film, because that's just like, if a movie primarily takes place in a restaurant or a bar, and while, you know, it's not like there's crazy things happening with food and drink, but that is what it is. It's a watering hole, and it's kind of this refugee place that he's just like, no politics, he is kind of neutral and like a bit of an isolationist, and isn't, you know, and you even have Claude Rains, you know, like going into the whole like, I'm on this side until that side wins and everything like that.
He's probably one of my favorite characters in the film.
Yeah, him and how do you pronounce his name? Ugarte. Ugarte, the one that kind of talks like this.
Peter Lorre.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Peter Lorre is one of my favorite actors of all time.
Yeah.
When that scene where they're trying to take him away.
Oh, yeah. When he's like...
He's like, Rick, you must help me, Rick.
Yeah, but even before that, he's like, can I cash in my chips? He's just very, very... I just love the... Him and Ferrari are just so good. Ferrari with the fly swatter.
Yeah.
All those characters are just so, so good.
I think that's what like is missing from a lot of films today is like the equally ancillary strong characters. Supporting cast. Like,
yeah.
I mean, he's not even supporting. He's sort of just a cameo. Whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, he's in 2-3 scenes. Yeah.
I'm sure you've seen it, but the Maltese Falcon.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You know, Bogart, Peter Lorre, and Sidney Greenstreet. The three people in this film are also in that, which I think came before this film.
Yeah, it came before this because I read that Ingrid Bergman, to get ready for working with Humphrey Bogart, watched that film a bunch of times.
Oh, really? Yeah. I didn't know that. Yeah. That's so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's those little characters to me sell it. They sell the film.
Yeah.
Because I believe them. And I also believe Conrad Veidt, the guy who plays the Nazi.
Major. He's a major. It's Captain.
I really, you'd know better than I.
Yeah. Well, no, I was just watching it earlier. But it's Captain Renault, and it's whatever his, I think Major. Yeah, Major Strasser. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah. And this is maybe me being like, maybe you know this already, but like Conrad Veidt was a big actor in like the early German silent films, Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, and he played I forgot what the name of the character was, but in a film called The Man Who Laughs, which was the inspiration to the Joker.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And so I just saw that film this year, actually, with Conrad Veidt.
Yeah.
And every time I see Conrad Veidt...
I've just
seen
footage from that. I haven't seen it, like, start to finish.
And it really looks like the Joker,
That, like, crazy, the big
smile. Yeah,
that
like, slick-back hair and the white face and stuff.
And he was a German refugee because while he wasn't Jewish, he was an actor and friends with a lot of Jewish people and was a bit out, you know, very, in obviously a good way, outspoken in Germany. And he found out the SS were coming after him, and he escaped. And so, he said he only wanted to play bad guys that didn't have any kind of like redeeming and like cool like vibes to them or whatever.
That's so interesting.
Yeah,
I know Peter Lorre was also. I don't know where he was born, but he lived in Germany for a long time. And one of the films that brought him to fame was a movie called M. Fritz Lang directed it, German director.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that when the Nazis like came to Germany, Peter Lorre got out of there. Also, Curtiz, who's the director, I think was Jewish.
Oh, okay.
There is a large amount of, like, and here's the thing about Casablanca that makes it different from a lot of films made during World War II, because this was made during the war was going on, is that while there is that scene of the anthems and stuff, it's not like this preachy sort of like rah-rah America, because it doesn't take place in America.
Yeah.
Rick essentially doesn't care.
Yeah.
You know, he is not on either side until...
Rick definitely, he embodies America. This movie began to, started getting made after Pearl Harbor.
Okay.
And so that's, you know, America was in at that point. But Rick definitely represents America before Pearl Harbor happened.
Like the Depression, sort of like, I feel like...
Depression, isolationist, like, it's just like, nope. Like, there was some line of just... you know, him, you know, wanting to, oh God, where did I put it? Just like, you know, yeah, your business is politics, mine is running a saloon. Like, he just doesn't care about, like, he doesn't want to get involved in that. He's got his world, he's looking out for him.
Yeah. You know? And I think that in certain ways, and not to get too political, mm-hmm. that's the most accurate depiction of Americans.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's just a person who's like, I'm not on one side or whatever, you know, it's just whatever happens, happens. Obviously, he's not a fan of the Nazis or whatever, but it's not like, he's not standing up on the table saying, hey guys, we got to do something about this. We got to band together, which is what a lot of films from back then have, especially films that were made during the war.
Oh, it's when Ugarte goes up to him. He's like, Rick, you got to help me. And he's just like, I stick my neck out for nobody. Like, it's
great
just like,
line.
Boom, boom, right there.
Great
like,
line.
Right there, you get that character.
Yep.
It was even before then. I mean, I love that it opens up with, like, the first time we're introduced to him, he's playing chess. And a fun fact about that I read was that in some later on, there was, like, some auction and there was a picture. Maybe that chessboard was being sold or there was some kind of picture. And that he was that like chess match that he's playing in the movie. He was playing with a friend of his. You know, they were shooting this in L.A. He was playing that game, longest game of chess ever, with a friend in New York. And he would take a picture after he made his move and then send it with the board.
Oh my God, get out of here!
Or maybe at least send the picture and maybe the other person was
That's
playing on another
so
board.
That's so funny.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I always think back to that one scene because. There is sort of, it's totally, totally relatable of like when you lose someone or sort of like when you have that relationship that falls through and Rick is just sitting there in the dark with Sam.
Yeah.
Well, it's the way it goes, one in, one out. Sam.
Yes, boss.
It's December 1941 in Casablanca. What time is it in New York?
What? My watch stopped.
I bet they're asleep in New York. I bet they're asleep all over America. Of all the gin joints in all the towns in all the world, she walks into mine. What's that you're playing?
Oh, just a little something on my own.
Oh, stop it. You know what I want to hear.
No, I don't.
You played it for her, you played it for me.
Well, I don't think I can remember.
If she can stand it, I can. Play it.
Yes, boss.
It's a famous scene, and there's, I guess, not worth mentioning, not anything that nobody hasn't said already about it, but there is something that's so damn heartbreaking about it, because he's just sitting there so defeated. And you just see the instant where he first sees Elsa in the bar.
Well, yeah, he comes out to hear the song and he goes up to Sam.
He's like, why are you playing that? I thought I told you never to play that song again.
Yeah, he even doesn't finish the line and he sees her and it's just like, uh-oh.
And she is gorgeous. I actually love the costumes in this film. Rick's white jacket is awesome.
Oh yeah, exactly. You gotta mention
so
that.
Great.
Yeah, the white white suit tux kind of like thing. Like that definitely has to be like a James Bond inspiration.
Sure, definitely. Especially since it takes like it's like very like casino like.
Yeah.
Around the drinking.
Yeah,
smoking,
yeah, yeah. There is the
gambling
element to it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, that's definitely.
And fun fact, Peter Lorre, I'm trying to get this right, Victor Fleming's first adaptation of James Bond before Dr. No with Sean Connery, Casino Royale. Peter Lorre plays the villain in Casino Royale. So he's technically the first Bond villain.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Just to bring that back around to Peter Lorre. I love Elsa's sort of like that like patterned shirt with the like skirt. Mm-hmm. I just love the costumes in this film. Yeah. Claude Rains looks awesome with his whole getup.
He's just there's so many great characters. Is there a scene of yours that like is a particular favorite to you?
I have to be cliche and just say the ending on the runway. Because there's something just totally classic Hollywood with the fog and the plane.
Yeah, the plane. Just the gun in the pocket.
Yeah. But there's something not Hollywood in the fact that it doesn't work out the way that you want it to work out.
Yeah.
You know?
But yeah, Rick had a plan all along. But he just, it wasn't the plan that we were all expecting.
Right.
I mean, it would have been like a whole, like, I mean, what do you think? Was she, who do you think she loved more? Like, you know, he goes and he says, like, yeah, like, you know, she, you know, like, he needs you. Like, you know, that Laszlo needs her. You know, she, like, without her, like, you know, she's his muse, his, like, inspiration to keep him going and fighting the good fight. And she clearly does love him. I mean, that was, you know, she said it was the hardest choice to make when she did in Paris, but then she would never do it again. But at the same time, like, who do you think she loved more?
I mean, it's a hard question because, you know, she obviously loved them for different reasons and at different times. But I do think that the right decision was to go with Laszlo and that she did love Laszlo more.
Yeah.
I do think that.
Yeah, I mean,
what do you think?
I think so, too. I mean, for both reasons that you just said, like, it is the right move. I mean, or let's do the three. Like, it's the right move because, yes, you're going to then be helping, like, this man do, you know, great work and you yourself doing great work, but, you know, like, with him. And then it's a good reason because you're getting out of a dangerous place. And then on top of that, like, he was your husband and, you know, your love before Rick. And I don't know how much time they had together in Paris.
That's the great thing.
Yeah.
Is that you really, I don't think they ever really explain how much, how
long but they were definitely, together. I mean, had to have been like more time that she was with, you know, her husband.
Sure.
You
know, yeah.
Everything like that. And she thought she was told that he was dead. So she had, you know, moved on, at least in the sense of Rick was probably exciting and, you know, like, I don't know, he was American.
I heard that, and I'm not sure if this is true, but I heard, you know, loving Ingrid Bergman and watching a few of her interviews, that she wasn't sure what the ending was.
Oh, okay.
That the script was sort of given her on a daily basis, and she wasn't sure what man she was going to end up with until that day of shooting.
I know this is based off of a play, and there were, like, you know, I mean, changes made, so I don't know if also then there was a different ending in the play, or, you know, what exactly, how that story unfolded. But it's a pretty classic. I mean, I have to agree. I mean, the ending is just, it's one of the all-time best endings. And what do you think is going to go on between Rick and, you know, obviously Reynald? What do you think, you know, what is this friendship going to mean for them? What do you think is going to go on after?
I don't know, because they're both so indifferent people.
Yeah.
You know, like, even what Reynald said is what you were saying before. I am on the side, and then when the other side wins, I'm on that side. Yeah. Rick sort of feels like he's the same way. Mm-hmm. I'm not exactly sure. That's a great question. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if they're going to do a business venture together, but I'm sure that they're going to be. I'm sure that they're going to be friendly in the way that maybe there will be other refugees who need help or something. Like, Renault in a position of power may turn a blind eye to things that Rick needs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, Rick may be able to supply him with information from people who hang around his cafe.
Yeah, I try not to get too, you know, dark, but I mean, at the same time, like, we're still, like, they're, you know, in the early, I guess mid, right? Because it's supposed to be this movie came out in 1942. Paris Has Fallen. I mean, it's supposed to be, I guess, like, I don't think America's in it yet, so it's like 1940. So it's like there's still a lot of the war to come. And then also, if you kill, like, a commanding officer, obviously they're going to send people there to investigate.
Sure.
It's probably not going to be a great situation. It's one of those situations that, like, and I do not want this to happen. I know people have like tried to like remake it, or God knows I don't want any kind of sequel. No. But it's like almost as if like you don't need, but like when you watch a movie like El Camino to Breaking Bad, and like, because at the end you're just like, what happens to Jesse? And like El Camino comes out and you're like, okay, that's what happened to Jesse. I'm happy for him. He at least is having a bit of like, can move on right now.
But just, but we like, didn't need that.
No, we didn't need that. But, you know, like, yeah.
But you want it, you know.
Yeah, but there's a little part where I'm like, I hope everything works out for Rick and Sam. And, I mean, right, you know, like, yeah, there's a lot of options that could happen there.
I will just say, too, that we'll always have Paris. This is one of my favorite lines in a film ever.
Yeah.
And I think it's because it just perfectly sums up that feeling of whether it's a person, whether it's a friend or an ex or something.
Mm-hmm.
But when there is something shared between two people, and it just isn't going to happen, there's always that little part in the back of your mind that says, well, we had those good times.
Yeah.
We're always going to have those memories. We're always going to have that. And just making it specific to Paris for them is great.
Yeah, you're already tying it. I mean, it's just one of the most beautiful cities in the world, a city of romance. And then they were there right when it was, you know,
falling.
Yeah, falling. Right? Yeah, exactly. Once the Nazis started occupying it. Which is just crazy, you know. Just, I mean, far better men and women than us, I'm sure, could do a complete, you know, obviously exists, but like breakdown of this movie. But because I'm just sure there's so many great little nuggets here and there, and just you got to get in the mind of even the people at the time of that they made this movie. Like it was released in 1942.
Yeah. So, and you can say like what I was, you know, you could Rick's like that line. You can say it in a paragraph, you could say it in three sentences, but he sums it up in just a few words.
Yeah.
Like, we'll always have Paris, hits me.
Boom.
And it just, you know what he means, she knows what he means, and she knows he's right.
Yeah.
I think, and that sort of. Oh, also, fun fact. Oh, here's a great thing to tie it into food.
Okay.
So I used to go out to California a lot, and there's an amazing restaurant in Santa Monica called Casablanca's, and it's sort of in this style. It's a Spanish restaurant, but it has like a Moroccan feel to it.
Okay.
They make like fresh tortillas. There's this woman who, there's like a count on the board next to her of like how many she's made. I think we were there like 1 year and it was like 900,000. I mean, the next year it was like 1 million, like, so whatever. But they have some of the real props from the film restaurant. The restaurant is known for like their obviously rice and beans, but they have this calamari steak.
Ooh.
Oh my God, it's delicious. It's so good. And in the corner, there's like a real telephone booth with like a mannequin of Bogart in it, or like a whatever, a wax figure of Bogart in it. They have one of the original hats. I forget what those hats are called, with like the little, you know, those like Moroccan hats.
Oh,
with
the Fez kind of
hat. Fez, exactly. Yeah. And they have autographs from everybody in the cast.
Cool.
On the wall. It's a fantastic restaurant, and
that's
it
awesome.
Pays homage to this great film. It's all Casablanca themed, it's all Bogart themed.
Awesome. That is a perfect foodie film story.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know what? I mean, it's Casablanca, however you want to say it.
I know.
But it's just, that's what it is. And it's just such a staple of American cinema, and just cinema in general. And I think it's just a movie that it does have this timeless feel. I definitely recommend it, obviously in general, but recommend for people to revisit it now, because I think it's just a great story. And at least I know, since I haven't watched in a while, it just even hit harder for me this time, and really appreciated it. But well, moving on, let's talk a couple of foodie scenes from non-foodie movies. I know you're a monster man, and while I couldn't find, actually, because I like playing, you know, clips from these, I couldn't find a clip to play, so let's just talk about it. But it's the Academy Award winner for Best Picture 2 years ago, The Shape of Water.
Oh, yeah.
There's some pretty good food. I mean, number one, great movie.
Amazing film.
Right? So from like a monster, you know, you love them, you know them, monster movie standpoint, obviously, it's even just much more than that. But how'd you feel about that movie?
I was really, really happy for Guillermo.
Yeah, me too. That was one of those, how I'm rooting for Brad Pitt, like for Best Supporting Actors, like how I was rooting for Guillermo del Toro for director. It's just like one of those things that, yes, this is a great movie, but he's just done so many terrific things that I'm like, I want him to get that recognition.
And I've you know, horror countdowns throughout the years that I've seen, he's a talking head, and he's talking about these classic films, saying like, you know, this really inspired me. So I knew him from that. I didn't actually ever see any of his films until I started watching his films, and I saw Shape of Water. I loved it. I loved him. And during his Oscar speech, he actually quoted a James Cagney film. Oh. And I was like, are you kidding me? He's hitting all my bases.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think I made a Facebook status around that time saying, tonight, an unattractive, overweight Universal Monsters fan won for Best Director. There's hope for me after all. Or something like that. But no, Shape of Water is fantastic. It does a good job in like paying homage to Creature of the Black Lagoon without actually... You know, they say in Shape of Water, oh, he's come from, like, the Amazon.
Yeah.
So is Creature of the Black Lagoon in that part of the world. So it's not, like, a remake or anything, but it pays tribute to it.
Drawing inspiration and not, paying all...
As far as the food goes, the two things I remember the most about that film are the egg that she gives him and the hard candy that Michael Shannon bites down on.
The hard candy, and then also, wasn't there the whole thing with Richard Jenkins and the pies, right? Like in the diner.
The neighbor?
Because he's a track, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
He kept asking the waiter for, was it like a key lime pie?
Or he was just trying all different pies, I think.
Oh, okay.
I couldn't find the clips, and I need, it's definitely a movie I need to watch again. I haven't seen it since, I'd seen it once in theaters.
Same.
So, yeah.
Same.
So I definitely need to rewatch it. But yeah, the eggs, like, it's just a really good, as far as, you know, like, that's their bonding moment. She figures out, you know, that the creature enjoys these eggs, so they just have lunch together, you know.
And I love the difference between, like, Michael Shannon plays probably one of my favorite screen villains.
He's so good. I mean, he's good in
everything.
Great in everything. And even, like, a totally different role, him in Knives Out.
I'm so happy to see him in Knives Out. I mean, there were so many people in there. The fact that Michael Shannon was in there, I was like, sold. Did you see The Iceman?
Yeah, which he was good in it. It's not that great of a movie for, like, I mean, it was a movie that I even, like, at one point I was like, ooh, if this doesn't get made, like, I'll definitely try to make this someday.
So somebody had to tell that story.
Yeah, exactly. Just, I mean, yeah. Pretty crazy story.
But like the difference between savoring food and sort of like when he's angry, just biting down. Like, just, doesn't he have that, like what he says about it? Something like, you know, my dad used to have these candies.
Oh, yeah.
There was like that line where he's describing it like, I just like to bite down on them or something like that. It's indicative of his character.
Yeah, just like fast and like, I mean, and the fact that he gets... The creature ends up like eating two of his fingers or biting it off.
That's right.
It's just very, instead of like the slow sucking of the hard candy, he's just like crunch, crunch, like, you know, through it, and just obviously not much like acting on feelings probably and everything like that. It's just that's a great character, and just in his demise and everything like that.
I don't know if he was nominated for Best Supporting Actor, but it's like Leo wasn't nominated for Django. Best Supporting Actor. It's like, even if he wasn't nominated, in my mind, that's who should have won it. Like, Leo should have won for Django. Michael Shannon should have won for Shape of Water.
Well, like, that year, because Christoph Waltz won that year for Django. And I do agree that Leonardo DiCaprio should have been nominated over him. But at that time, also, the big man himself, the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman, was nominated for The Master, a movie you haven't seen yet.
I haven't seen it.
But... he was nominated and he didn't win. I was kind of pissed off about that. He has an Academy Award for Capote, lead actor, but this was like supporting, you know, character. And yeah, I was really rooting for him for that year. But yeah, no, Shape of Water. That's a lot of good food representation in that. But as far as playing a clip, I went with another. Because when it comes to the Academy Awards, like last year, Green Book won.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good movie, but there's just a certain. I don't know, falls into like kind of what some people call, and I'm doing air quotes, like safe, story to tell, and just like hits to everybody. I remember being in college and one professor saying like, because, you know, like No Country for Old Men won. And that's such a, what she called a genre film. And that doesn't happen that often, but Shape of Water is clear. I mean, there's a scene where a woman has sex with a fish man. Like that's, you didn't think that that's going to win Best Picture necessarily.
No.
Yeah, but it's pretty crazy that it does. And then cut to back in 1991, I think. I always get confused because the end of the year the movie comes out versus when they can. Silence of the Lambs.
Or a person's eating another person.
Yeah, exactly. There's some food scenes in it. But right now, let's just play the clip of, well, you guys, know, it's the, if you don't know what's coming, come on. It's a famous clip.
You see a lot, Doctor. When are you strong enough to point that high-powered perception at yourself? What about it? Why don't you look at yourself and write down what you see? Maybe you're afraid.
A census taker once tried to test me. I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti. You fly back to school now, little starling.
I mean, that you said, I was like, you know what, I was about to say it, and I'm like, I'm gonna save it. Like, that and Jaws are, like, two of the scariest movies to me of all time. Like,
Silence of the Lambs is terrifying.
Her at the end in the basement with, and Buffalo Bill with the night vision goggles and everything.
Oh, my
like
God,
that.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, it ends in violence of her, like, shooting him and everything like that, but just, yeah, just this sheer, I mean, we know exactly what crazy, horrible, frightening individual he is, and just her, you know, he's like so close and she turns around and it's just such, I mean, oh, so brilliantly executed.
And that's one of the three films to win the best five of the Oscars. That holds a really weird place in Oscar history.
Yeah.
Which is like the, it won best actor, actress, yeah, director, screenplay, and picture. And only three films in history have ever done that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is, Silence of the Lambs, yeah, in 1991. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest in 1975. And it,
I wonder,
happened,
I wonder why
night,
you know this information.
Yeah. Yeah, I was talking about, you know, I was talking about this with Nick.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, how the hell do you know? Like, it was just, that was just like a weird fact that I feel like.
Well, yeah, but there's certain times that, like, I mean, so then One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest being one of your favorite films of all time. So
yeah,
I'm sorry,
yeah.
So what was then the third one?
It Happened One Night, yeah, okay. 1934.
Yeah. But yeah, Jonathan Demme in this movie is just like.
I mean, this movie's like off the wall.
Yeah.
Sounds like.
And that scene that I just played is just, I mean, you know, it's a, that's obviously one of the most quotable lines. That's why I love it also. We were talking so many great quotes from Casablanca, that, like, you know, with a nice bottle, you know, fava beans with a nice bottle of Chianti.
I'm having dinner with an old friend.
Yeah, having dinner with an old
friend. No, having an old friend over for dinner.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was the line. That's such a great last line. Let's talk about great last lines in a film.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
That's a great last line.
And just the slow walk away of him in, like, that, like, white linen suit and the hat. And
totally
like, he looks
disguised,
like he belongs at, like, Casablanca.
Yeah, he's walking into Rick's.
Yeah, exactly.
Because isn't he in? He's in a totally different country.
He's in the Bahamas.
Oh, he's in the Bahamas. Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's in the, like, Bahamas. Yeah, because Chilton, Dr. Chilton is down there.
It's such a great film, and I haven't seen it again in a while, but I've seen it twice, and both times it's terrified me.
Yeah, it's still, yeah, it's a, yeah, terrifying movie. I mean, these amazing, amazing performances, just like a it's really, it's a perfect movie.
Bringing him out of the plane in that sort of like get up.
Oh yeah, just that sheer, like, yeah, leather, yeah, like the mask kind of thing, and just, yeah.
And then him taking the key, obviously, that scene with the opera music. When he takes the key.
Yeah.
And then the other scene I remember from that is like when they're sort of storming, like they're trying to look for what's going on, and he's ripped somebody open, and they're just hung up on that cell like an angel almost. Ugh.
Yeah, it's really, it's, yeah, just the
film,
imagery in that movie is really creepy. I mean, it's like beautiful in, like, you know, the cinematic sense, and then absolutely horrifying and creepy in a, just like to think that, you know, if that happening.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, recently, but for PS I Still Love Hoffman, our Brian and I's, you know, rewatch of, you know, we have the Hoff fans vote for what movies they want us to rewatch, and we did Red Dragon, which is the prequel to Silence of the Lambs, but it was made, you know, obviously that many years
I've never later. Seen it. How
and
is it?
Philip Seymour Hoffman is in it as like a scumbag, like a journalist for, you know, like an Inquirer kind of thing. It's good. It's made by Brett Ratner. You know, obviously we recognize his scandal noted. but no, it's Ed Norton, Ralph Fiennes, like I said, Philip Seymour Hoffman. It's a pretty good job. It doesn't ruin the, you know, because that's the whole thing when it comes to bad guys, like you don't want to know more about them,
right? You want to know less.
And so you really like the opening scene is because Ed Norton is the guy that puts Hannibal Lecter behind bars, and so it's him confronting him and then like and then you know him getting arrested or whatever, and like they both wound one another and everything like that, and they're just always kind of like connected in that kind of way. And then, like, the Buffalo Bill of that movie is Ralph Fiennes' character, and he's the...
Oh, okay.
He's the Red Dragon. That's, like, the you know, like, Buffalo Bill Red Dragon. But, yeah, no, just it's a pretty good movie, but, still just, like, doesn't... It's probably the best in the sense of, like, you know, Silence of the Lambs, and then, you obviously, down a bunch of, like, pegs, but then Red Dragon, then, like, Hannibal, then Hannibal fucking Rising, that stupid prequel of, like, that's ones that, like, you know, like, you... They want you to have sympathy for Hannibal Lecter because you see that his sister was, like, eaten by Russian soldiers in World War II or some shit like that.
I never saw them, but like, is Ray Liotta in one of them?
Ray Liotta's in Hannibal, which is directed by Ridley Scott.
Wow.
A fantastic director. And it's not bad. Gary Oldman plays a character in it. It's not bad. It just doesn't feel as like, I don't know, because Jodie Foster also didn't come back as Clarice. Julianne Moore played her, and while Julianne Moore did a very good job, it just, you know, like, just the rapport that they had in the first movie, it would have been better if they had, but Jodie Foster didn't want to come back, and rightfully so.
Gotcha.
But yeah, so those are The Shape of Water, Silence of the Lambs, we got, you know, and then Casablanca, three Best Picture winners.
That's right. Oh my God, that's right.
Yeah, there was a reason. There was a reason.
Because like sometimes you see best, like, you know, I was like, did Casablanca win
Best Picture? It's one of those, that's like, did
because
it? Yeah, yeah.
Citizen Kane did not win Best Picture.
No, it was like, wasn't it panned at first for the most part?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I mean,
so was movies like Doctor Strangelove, I think. And, you know, there's other, you know, like Kubrick never won a, you know, Best Director or anything like that. Yeah.
Insane. Yeah. Hitchcock never won.
Yeah.
It's like, what the hell? Who are they giving it to?
I think he won editing. I know he was an editor, but or some, you know, in the beginning. But
yeah.
But the point being, yeah, exactly. Like some of the most amazing, you know, it's like obviously I know you're not a big sports person, but like Dan Marino never winning a Super Bowl or something.
Sure,
like
that. I've actually heard of that. No, wait, was he on the Dolphins?
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
Well, last but not least, our lovely little segment called Gut Instincts. So these are just some questions that just give me an answer, whatever comes to you first.
Okay, cool.
Favorite fast food?
In-N-Out Burger.
Nice. West Coast, look at you with the West Coast drops of this.
I don't know. Something about me just takes it back.
Go-to alcoholic beverage?
A Blue Moon.
With orange?
Yeah, I'm a basic bitch. Yeah.
Favorite childhood snack?
Favorite childhood snack? I loved Gushers. I was a big Gusher fan.
Yeah.
Although now I look at them in complete disgust.
Oh, yeah. But, like, there's so many snacks from back then, though, that, like, were delicious. And then you think about them now, and you're like,
things aren't that color.
Yeah, there shouldn't be that consistency. Yeah. Sweet or savory?
I am a savory all the way.
Favorite food city, domestic, and have you been abroad?
I have been abroad.
Okay,
yeah.
So, yeah.
Favorite domestic food city would probably be New York, honestly. I mean, it's just the place I've explored the most. There's a whole lot of options, mm-hmm. a whole lot of good street food, which I am into. I am sort of one of the guys who's like, the shittier the place looks, the more I'm likely to go in it. Because I just want to see if it's good food.
Yeah.
And most of the times, the places that are bad on the outside is where I find the best food on the inside.
Yeah, don't judge a book by its cover. The Bendix Diner
is a key example. And foreign, I would have to say... I'm sorry, I'm trying to think of the name of the city, but for this case, we'll just say I studied abroad in Florence.
Oh, cool.
And I was like obsessed with their cuisine, their paninis. I'm a sandwich guy.
Yeah.
So paninis, yeah. I was in. And a lot of their other dishes, like their steak is fantastic. They're known for their steak. Their pasta is really good. But what threw me was the portion size. Like, you get to these places, like, oh, yeah, I'll take pasta. And it's, like, a fourth of the serving of what would be a pasta dish here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I, like, the first time I got that, I was like, what the hell is this? Yeah, like, I am screwed. But I adapted. 4 months of eating it, I was, like, stuffed by that. And then I came home. That's a different story. This is supposed to be speed questions.
No, no, it's fine. It's whatever. It's whatever. It's not supposed to be speeding from, like, answer to answer. It's just supposed to be speed and, like, as a little thought process. It's supposed to be the gut instinct.
So I also just want to say, when I went to, like, after studying in Italy for a couple of months, I went to Ireland. That was the first country I visited outside of Italy.
Yeah.
And I couldn't wait to eat, like, meat. Because everything in Italy is just variations of sauce and dough.
Okay.
So I got to Ireland, I was like, bangers and mash. All right, let's get some salsa. And potato. Yeah, exactly.
Favorite cuisine?
A favorite, like, sort of nationality? Like,
yeah.
Sushi.
Sushi, yeah.
It is my favorite.
Guilty pleasure food.
I like cold Chinese food.
Nice. Yeah.
I really like cold Chinese food. So do I. Cold General Tso's chicken.
Yeah.
I can't go cold rice because I don't hate myself that much, but yeah, cold Chinese food.
Favorite condiment?
Honey mustard. I judge a place by how their honey mustard is.
Yeah, all right.
I need to, like certain diners have great ones, certain restaurants have great ones. Honey mustard is my favorite condiment.
Do you like one that's, like, more honey or one that's more mustard?
More honey, because I feel like, and now I'm, like, really getting into this. But
it's fine. I agree with you. I like the sweeter honey mustards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just, there's certain ones, like, the darker, the closer they are to, like, a Dijon, the less I'm going to like it. I sort of like the ones that are a little creamier, ones that look almost a little white, where you can, like, see the mustard seeds in them.
Yeah.
They have, like, the greatest taste, I think.
What's the last thing you said you just had dinner, so what's the last thing you ate?
Like, tonight?
Yeah.
My mom made, she calls it, like, a Greek chicken. It's like a seared chicken with peppers and onions in this, like, lemon sauce, and then we put, like, a tzatziki and I had it on a pita.
Nice. Oh, sounds good.
It was actually really good.
I'm getting hungry.
It's actually really good.
What would be your last meal?
I've thought about this far more than anyone should ever think about this. I don't know why I'd be in the position, but I mean, can I ask you a question about it?
Sure.
Like, would I be able to have, and this is such a fat ass question. I could just see the guard looking at me like, what the fuck? So,
well, you don't have to be in jail. You could just, I don't know, like,
that's
be someone that's, that's told true. That, like, I don't know. You just, like, we live in a culture where you know the day you're going to die or something like that. And obviously it doesn't have any other weird repercussions in your life. And, like, you don't get, like, too, like, lazy about other things, but you just, like, live life to, you know, whatever fullest. But, like, that last, you know, is going to be your last meal. Yeah. So
I will say, and I'm throwing it again back to the West Coast. My favorite meal of all time is Fisherman's Wharf has a New England clam chowder in a sourdough bread bowl.
Oh, it's so
and
good,
it
then.
Is
yeah.
like huge.
Huge.
Wait, you've had it, right?
Oh, yeah. In San Francisco.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would kill three men to have that meal.
Ironically, you're already in jail in this situation.
That's how I got there.
Yeah, that's how you got there, is because to do that, and you're like, well, that was the reason, so it's only, you know, poetic that,
that I got it now. Meal. Yeah, that's my pick, though. Sourdough bread bowl.
I mean, you said you like being home and having the kitchen yourself, but do you prefer to dine in or dine out?
That's a great question. I do like to go out because I feel like it's more of an experience. I feel like what people, like, sort of lack in America is, like, the experience of eating. Like, you sit down and you
the
get
presentation. The,
yeah. You know, it's like so many people just eat on the go, which is fine. Like, I do. We all do it. But there's something nice about, like, sitting down at a table and not having to, like, get up until you're ready. And, like, the food comes to you and it's presented well. And it's more an experience.
Yeah.
Like, when I find that when I'm cooking, I'm eating while I'm cooking because I'm hungry.
Mm-hmm.
Usually when I'm cooking, I'm hungry. And by the time I'm done, I'm now not going to eat what I just cooked. It's, like, the next meal.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I like dining out because I also, since I like cooking, I like eating something someplace and maybe trying to replicate it at home.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah. What would be your spirit food? I mean, I know you know you're saying sandwiches, maybe a particular sandwich. What? But not to obvious. It could be, doesn't have to be a sandwich. But what food you think, like, best embodies you, your personality?
That's a good question. I would say a sandwich, actually.
Yeah.
I would say probably, like, a triple decker. BLT.
That extra piece of bread in there.
With the bacon grease like dripping down onto the fries.
Yeah,
I would say that like a sandwich represents me because I have like a lot of things that I like that may not necessarily be good separately, but together between two pieces of bread, it's like, I can deal with that. That's okay.
Anthony Scali, I can deal with that.
That's what people say when they see me coming. I can deal with them for a few hours.
You go to the movies. What kind of snack are we having?
You know what's funny? I'm not a movie snacker, but popcorn, actually. I really do like it because I don't have to worry about eating and like getting stuff on me. Mm-hmm. At Alamo, a few times, I've had like meals. I've had a burger. Yeah. I've had a salad. What the hell I'm thinking that day? But it's just more work. I can't concentrate on the movie.
Yeah.
I need something that's there that I can just mindlessly go at it. Yeah. So popcorn. And actually, if I had to give a candy, I would probably do like Junior Mints.
Nice.
I like them.
Yeah, they should. I've never been to a movie theater that sells. They should have a freezer there, and you should be able to get certain candies frozen. Like Junior Mints were one of those candies I always put in the
frozen.
Freezer. Yeah.
Yeah. You're right.
Or like snow caps or like Reese's cups, like mini cups and stuff like that.
Better cold.
And last but not least, a great, if not the greatest, lesson you've learned when it comes to food.
The greatest lesson I've learned is that you have to. You have to be able to eat well in order to be able to cook well. I've had food from people who really aren't big into food, and it never tastes great. Somebody who appreciates the art of food is going to make better food. And those are always the people that I try to like be fed by.
I like that. That's a good one.
Because it's true. Like my dad, for instance, like he you know, used to be very large. He lost a lot of weight. Uh-huh. And he always used to say, I used to live to eat. Now I eat to live. Like he eats things that he really could eat anything. He doesn't care. He doesn't care about the taste. Like he's like, every diner's the same. Every restaurant's the same. My mom's the complete opposite. She's like, you know, every food is like specific to what this dish is. And I'm more that way. And I feel like because she knows how to eat, she will know how to cook.
All right. I like that. I've never, no one's ever shared that thought with me before. I like that. Thank you for sharing that. Well, I can't thank you enough for coming on Foodie Films right now. I know you've got a couple like projects in the works, from a documentary to your own podcast that you've been working on. So please right now tell people where they can find you on social media, or just tell them about those projects.
Sure. So right now I'm directing a documentary about the Bendix Diner in Hasbrook Heights.
Kind of perfect for Foodie Films.
Perfect for Foodie Films. And that should be wrapping production in the summer, late spring, early summer. Mm-hmm. So by the end of the year, Bendix Diner will be up, the documentary. I'm also making a podcast called Pushed Aside. It's a true crime podcast about the murder of a girl in Saddlebrook, New Jersey in 1969. And actually, during the course of recording for the podcast, the crime was solved.
Oh, wow.
There was a confession.
Wasn't there something, it wasn't not for this crime, but like, wasn't there something recently, just like last week or 2 weeks?
It was this crime.
Oh, what? It was that one.
Yeah. Because
I saw that you liked, but I wasn't sure if you just, whether you posted or you liked it or something, or maybe I just even saw it. And I was just curious if it was for that, or obviously if it, you know, just sparked your interest because you're doing this this podcast about it. But that's cool.
Yeah, so I have those two. It's both very large projects.
Yeah, just cool passion projects. I've really enjoyed all of your video content that I've ever seen. You used to have, you did like a couple of those, and even how I kind of found out about, well, I knew about LPG, but you did, what were those, like, that series called? That was, and then you did the one on the movie theater and...
It was called Backyard Treasures.
Backyard Treasures.
I did the movie theater, the candy store in Lodi called Cardi Sugar Bowl, and LPG.
Yeah.
Oh, and then I did one on a Halloween, Clinton Place in Hackensack.
Yeah, like, that they always Halloween street go crazy for.
I guess Bendix was supposed to be like another Backyard Treasure, but it's gotten to be, as I've made the documentary, I thought it was a documentary about the Bendix Diner, but the more I'm doing it, it's really on John, who's the waiter, the subject.
Yeah.
And so it's more about him now than the diner.
He's got a really interesting story. All the footage that you've shown me of that so far is really cool. So I'm looking forward to seeing the final product. I'm sure I'll see some, maybe some iterations even before that. But
thank you.
Yeah.
And if you want to find it, it's Sharkbite Productions on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, all that stuff.
Did you put up any like test footage, or are you like anything for Benedict's yet? Or
I shared some stills a while ago.
Yeah.
But as we're wrapping production, I'm gonna start posting some social media content
for you. Just like maybe a little teaser stuff, anything like that.
But, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and once you do, we'll definitely I'll share it on Foodie Films.
Appreciate it.
So,
thank
you again for coming on, and we have a little catchphrase to end every episode. It's "there's more to cut." So if you don't mind saying that to foodies out there.
Okay, there's more to cut.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a cut.
That's a cut.
Yummy, yummy, yummy. I got love in my tummy, and I feel like I'm loving you. Love you, such a sweet thing, good enough to eat thing, and it's just a while.